Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on 20 small private businesses when we come back. You know, Joe Smith started the day early, having set his alarm clock made in Japan for 6 a.m., while his coffee pot, also made in Japan, is perking, he puts his blow dryer, made in Taiwan, to work, and then shaves with his electric razor, made in Hong Kong. He puts on a dress shirt, made in Taiwan, his designer jeans, made in Singapore, and a pair of tennis shoes, made in Korea. Then, after cooking up some breakfast on his new electric skillet, made in the Philippines, he sits down to figure out, on his calculator, made in Mexico, how much he can spend today. Then, after setting his watch, made in Switzerland, to the radio, made in Hong Kong, he goes out and gets in his car, made in Germany, and goes looking, as he has for many months now, for a good-paying American job. Then, at the end of another discouraging and fruitless day, Joe decides to relax for a while, so he puts on a pair of sandals, made in Brazil, pours himself a glass of wine, made in France, turns on his TV, made in Japan, and then ponders again why it is that he can't find a good-paying American job. Now, you know, instead of a good-paying American job, why doesn't Joe look for a good-paying American private business dealing in property instead of dealing in income? Now, if you'd like to tap into this power of private business, why don't you call an order our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we're talking about 20 small private businesses, 20 little out of the way, off the wall kind of modalities for making money. And I'm not talking about just making a living. Most of you people out there, you ain't making $150,000 a year. I asked Larry Sykes one day, just kind of off the cuff, I said, Larry, I know it's none of my business and I shouldn't ask this, but would you share with me about, you know, just give me a number, about how much money do you make a year? You know, the sheriff had already busted him for the $154,000. And so I was kind of curious, does he make $154,000 a year? Does he make $154,000 every decade? How long did it take you to save up $154,000 as a buyer, seller, trader? Because, listen, I'll tell you what shocked everybody in our neighborhood, everybody in this county. It's because he lives in a very poor neighborhood. And we had to figure, well, what's he doing? Dealing drugs? See, we never knew for a minute. We never thought, never dreamed. Nobody ever would have imagined that this guy would have 150 grand. Not in 1,000 years. You know, normal people that have $150,000, you know, they're living in a pretty neat house, you know, over here someplace, you know, making payments. Not Larry. Everything he's got is free and clear. Free and clear. And this guy does not practice the Mosaic Law. He doesn't practice the Bible. But I'll tell you what he's practicing. He's practicing private property. Larry Sykes is not a communist. Yeah, that's right. This guy, Larry Sykes, he is not a communist. That's why he's got the $150,000. All right, so I'll tell you about what he's making. He didn't tell me exactly, because I'm not sure he files and pays his taxes every year, but he said, yeah, I can do that every year without too much trouble. Yep, I can do that every year without too much trouble. Listen, boys and girls, if you're making $100,000 a year, you're in the top 5% of income earners in this country. 5%. And here's a hillbilly over here living on Poverty Row, and he says, yeah, I can do that every year. So when the sheriff came in and took his $154,000, do you know what he did? He took about 1 year's work from Larry. Boys and girls, if your bank foreclosed on you and took about $150,000, and that was 1 year, you people would be in fat city. Fat city. And I'm sitting here telling you, if this hillbilly can do that, by God, a PhD or somebody with a college degree can do that. Can't they? Well, they sure ought to be able to. But it's a change in outlook. Because most people, they want to work for somebody. We've all been brainwashed into believing we want a job. We want to go to college so we can get a degree so that we can go to work for General Motors or Ford. We can get a job and we can go to work for the bank. We can get a job over here as a computer engineer or something like that, and we can work for Dell Computer. The American dream is to work, to be trained, to be a bondservant for life. This guy Sykes I told you about in the last program, he's not a bondservant. Guy's a common law free man. Now, if you asked him, he wouldn't know that. He wouldn't have the vocabulary. He wouldn't have the legal education. He couldn't tell you what he was. He doesn't know. But he's not working for the man. And that's key. He's not a bondservant. This guy's out here, he's an entrepreneur. He's out working for himself. He goes out and he buys a truckload of Gatorade and he goes out and sells it. He buys it for a dollar and sells it for two. He's got his Keystone markup in there. Now, I ran out of time yesterday and I wanted to complete a thought. I bought one case of cornflakes for 50 cents a box. That was $6. But let me show you what I showed you a couple of days ago. And I said, if you'll take care of your customer will take care of you. And there's a distinction that I put into my business school, and I say it this way, or this is the way I put it. I say there are businessmen and there are business boys. Most people are business boys. This guy, Larry Sykes, is a businessman. That's not a business boy doing business there. He drove into my driveway, and he's got, I think it's 17, 18 boxes, cases of cornflakes that he bought, and I don't know exactly what he paid for it, but my guess is he's paying about $50 for a pallet of cornflakes, maybe 100, but certainly not over 100, probably more like 50. And I don't know how many boxes or cases of cornflakes are on a pallet, but my guess is that there's 50. I buy pallets of stuff every once in a while, and I count them up, and there's oftentimes 50, 60, 40, you know, something like that. Now, a box of cornflakes is about $3 today, and a box of cornflakes then was probably $2.50 or something on that order. I don't know exactly, but if they were $3 a box, that's $36 a case. Retail. I mean, when you go into the grocery store and buy a box of cornflakes, it costs you $36 a case. But you just buy it one box at a time, lady. Have you ever thought about buying cornflakes by the case? I think even Harps, you know, if you walked in and said, I don't want to buy 5 pounds of oranges, I want to buy a whole box. We do that quite often. And the produce guy, he gives us the case price. For instance, if you buy bananas, and you buy the old bananas that have black spots on them, they'll sell you those for $3 a case over here at Harps. Town and Country, $3 a case. I think there's 36 pounds in a box of bananas. They're selling, I saw the other day, 89 cents a pound for bananas. A Town and Country, 89 cents a pound. You know, it used to be 29 cents a pound, then 39 cents a pound, then 49 cents a pound. Hell, they're pushing a dollar a pound for bananas now. I'm pushing. I'm not there yet, but they're getting up there. And when those bananas get a little bit old, they got to get rid of them. Bananas don't keep too long. And so I buy those bananas for $3 a case, take them home, cut them up, dry them, and stick them in jars. Dried bananas. Have you been into the health food store and bought some dried banana chips? Try it sometime. So again, a dollar saved or a penny saved is a penny earned. Well, a dollar saved is a dollar earned. And so you can go out and buy this stuff cheap. You can buy it at auction. You can buy it in bulk. Then you save yourself a bundle of money at the same time. You haven't thought about it because nobody ever brought it to your attention. But I was watching, Katie or somebody or one of these TV shows, a news show, and they're showing these people on their food stamps up in Chicago. And the guy in the grocery store says, oh, these people, they don't buy much, you know. In the last 5 or 6 days before the first of the month. But as soon as the first of the month comes, they all flock into the store to buy. That's when they get their food stamps and they get their welfare checks on the first of the month. And those poor people, they walk in there and they buy cornflakes at $3 a box. And then complain about how poor they are. Listen, if you don't have a whole lot of money, then you can't afford to be buying stuff at retail. You know, Ted Kennedy, he can go in and buy a box of cornflakes. But, you know, you and I, we need to be buying our cornflakes by the carton, by the case, or maybe by the pallet. Now, when you buy, you're going to find out that you got this big surplus. You know, instead of paying $3 a box, you know, maybe you're paying 2 bits a box. Now, I'll bet you that old Larry bought that pallet of cornflakes, and he probably paid about 10 cents a box, and he's selling them for 50 cents a box. He's making five times his money, but he's only selling one case at a time. Now, notice he said, if you'll buy all 17 cases, I'll give them to you for 25 cents a box, $3 a case. Well, hell, I know that when he was selling them to me for $3 a case, he hadn't paid over a buck and a half for them. Now, remember I said you're looking for a keystone markup. You're looking for 100% markup. But there's nothing wrong with having 2, 3, 500, or 10 times markup if you can get away with it. I mean, hell, you know, if that's what the market will bear, then let's do it. But your minimum, you know, you're looking to double your money every time you make an investment. That's the objective. That's what business is all about, and that's what business does. So if you think you're walking into a grocery store like Harps and paying $3 for a box of cornflakes, and that Harps is making 6%, I've heard this crap from the grocery industry. They say, well, we make 6%. What a crock of BS. Hell, you couldn't figure your profit margin to plus or minus 6%. That's just a damn lie. You know, as old Mark Twain says, you know, you got lies and then you got damn lies. The grocery store has got a keystone markup in. Now, there are some fair trade items that they don't keystone, like milk. You know, they don't have that. It's 10%, I think. Gasoline is another one. It's a fair trade item. So government gets in here, and they've got price control. So that's what the bottom line is. That's what fair trade means. It means price control. Now, the other side of the coin, though, is that the grocery store is making a full keystone markup in everything that's in there. So when you buy a quart of motor oil in Harp's supermarket for $1.69, they paid 70 cents for that quart of motor oil. And they sold it to you for $1.69. Now, that's where reality's at. So let's just get down on the bottom line. Now, there isn't any reason why you can't do the same thing. Now, there's another area, though, of business that I wanted to bring to your attention that we call trade or exchange. Trade and exchange. There's quite a bit to be said about that. And I'm a trader. I do a lot of trading. In fact, if you look on our website there, we've even got a trade list on there. You know, so if somebody looks at our trade list and they say, hey, I got one of those, that's good, profitable business for all of us. Now, I wasn't looking for a Corvette, but I mentioned the last program my wife traded for a Corvette. Actually, she didn't buy it. She traded for it. And trade is good. And I'm going to tell you about a trade over here, because I had a student one time. He came into class and he wanted to go to school. And he said, hey, I have a grandfather's clock that my mother paid $4,200 for down at the local furniture store. Now, grandfather clocks, I don't know if you've been into the furniture store pricing them, but they come in all price ranges. You can get some pretty nice looking grandfather clocks for $1,500, $1,800. And yeah, they go up to $6,000-$8,000. Depends on how ornate they are and what company made them and what company shipped it and or what country and so on. So they're kind of all over the marketplace over here, you know. But, you know, here's a guy, his mother went in. She paid full bore retail plus 10. Just needed to buy a grandfather's clock, and that's the way people buy. You know, they just say, I got to have one of those. And so they just go down here to the store and buy it. And, of course, when she bought that grandfather's clock, you can rest assured that the furniture store had at least a Keystone markup in it. Maybe two. I don't know, but at least one. So the store paid $2,100 for that, $2,100. And sold it to her for $42. Now, this guy says to me, said, I would like to go to your school, Mr. Gordon, and I don't have all the cash to pay for that. Would you be interested in a grandfather's clock? And so the answer to that's no. I'm not interested in a grandfather's clock at all, but my wife is. And my wife had said to me that she just really wanted a grandfather's clock. Now, we're the kind of people, old fogies that we are, we're the kind of people, we would not spend $4,200. I mean, if I had $10,000 in cash sitting in John Harlan's bank, I would not spend $4,200 on a grandfather's clock, and neither would my wife. I mean, she wanted one. She would like to have one. She really desired one, you know. But if I had $100,000 in John's bank, I would not go out and buy a new Lexus. Absolutely no way in hell would I go out and buy a new car. So there's another way, though, that we can come into possession of some of these neat toys in life, you know. And these deals come along all the time. All the time. I mean, they're just out there. The opportunity is just everywhere. Now, this young fella, he does not want his mother. His mother died, and he's inherited the house, and he's got all the furniture. He doesn't really care much about this grandfather's clock. And so he says to my wife, well, would you trade half of class for the clock? And so the real cash value of this clock is how much? It's $4,200 retail, so its cash value is what? 25%. It's worth about $1,000 in cash value. Now, all of us that are in the business world are able to put these numbers together, and I'm just sharing it with you so that you know, whether you're a truck driver or housewife or whatever it is, you want to know what the furniture store is making off of you when you buy something. The answer is they're making 100% markup. That's what they're making. You want to know, well, what's the supermarket making? They're making 100% markup. That's what they're making. So I just told you. So when somebody buys something and then they've got it and it's now used, what's its cash value? Well, its cash value is $1,000. Well, what's its trade value? Well, its trade value is if it's new, is worth the retail price. If it's used, it's worth 50% of its retail price. So get these numbers down so that you've got something to work off of. Because any time that you're working with another trader, he's got these numbers right in his head. So when my wife is trading with somebody, you know, the numbers are right there. I mean, this is just the standard in the industry. This is the way it works. If you're an oil man, you know what a barrel of oil sells for. You know what the transportation costs are. And, of course, the businessman, he keeps his business or his trade secret. I mean, he's not going to tell you what he's paying for something. That's his secret. But I'm sharing with you, I don't know exactly what it is, but I can tell you in round numbers what it is. So if the guy's a businessman, he's got a Keystone markup. If he paid $4,200, if that's the retail price for it, he paid $21. Now, sometimes it's even less than that. And the higher-priced items have two marks in them. So a grandfather's clock probably has two marks in it. Probably. Be my guess, because it's a luxury item. It's not like buying a sofa and a chair, see? Or a Lazy Boy recliner. Lazy Boy's got one mark in it, but that grandfather's clock's probably got two. So my wife dickered with the guy for a while. Anyway, the deal came down. She gave him $2,100 credit against one of our schools. Half price for the grandfather's clock. It does two things. One, it gives my wife a hell of a bargain. And it gives this guy an outlet for something that he doesn't want anyway. And instead of having to pony up $2,100 in $100 bills to go to school, he ponies up a grandfather's clock that he hadn't gotten used for and doesn't want anyway. And so he gets rid of a piece of trash, in his mind, a piece of trash. And my wife takes this trash and she views it as a treasure. That's the beauty of barter. It's cumbersome. It is. There's no two ways about that. You know, running around trying to, you know, buy a tank of gas and using grandfather clocks, you know, to barter down at the gas station is cumbersome. I don't deny it. But that isn't the way we buy gas. And that's not the way we trade grandfather clocks. All right. Now, strike a bargain through bartering. You know, for kids, bartering has always been a prime way to acquire, and it's an enviable way to do those things, those treasures in life. So what kid hasn't traded his mother's chocolate chip cookies for his best friend's mother's homemade ice cream? Or a favorite toy for a half-dead frog? Or a cat's eye boulder marble for a broken slingshot? You know, now that's a real deal. Bartering may have been abandoned as baby stuff when you entered the adolescent world of high finance, where lucrative lawn mowing jobs paid actual, instant, no dickering about it dollars. From then on, the importance of the green stuff probably entered a powerful influence in your life, endowing you with the attendant stresses, tensions, and headaches that go with surviving in a cash-oriented society. However, the ravages of recession and inflation have forced many urban and suburban people back to the land in an effort to reduce their living expenses. And a number of farmers are reverting to yesterday's methods, including bartering their goods and services for those that others can provide. Now, over the past few years, one such farmer has moved considerably away from paying exclusively with cash to bartering frequently and cleverly for many of the essentials and non-essentials of life on his 150-acre farm. By using the bartering process, he's been able to channel most of his cash flow back into the farming operation. His need for ready cash for a multitude of food items and small services has been diminished, and the fun of bartering has relieved some of the everyday financial pressures associated with running a business. Now, anyone can barter. Anyone can learn how to trade. It's a learned way of thinking. It isn't something you're born with now, children. It's something that you have to learn how to do. Now, this man started bartering with 2 acres of strawberries that he planted to sell on a pick-your-own basis. A neighbor lady who lived on a dairy farm spied the strawberries, and the two farmers struck a bargain. For every 4 cases of his strawberries, her family would manure 1 acre of his land. This exchange cut his fertilizer bill in half. Now, let's pause right here. Let me show you something. A dairy farm. I'm an old dairy farmer. We're producing manure by the manure spreader load. So the lady down at the dairy farm, she's looking at the strawberries up here, which take a lot of work, effort, and time and energy, you know, to produce. And they're sitting there talking about this. And this guy says, "Tell you what, you take all of that waste product that you call manure down there, load it in your manure spreader. Drive your tractor load of manure down here to my farm and spread it on 1 acre of my farm, and I will give you 4 cases of strawberries." Well, boys and girls, I don't know if you're aware of this, but if you've got a strawberry patch out here, I mean, that thing produces a lot of berries. I mean, cases and cases and cases and cases of berries. See, most of us, we're used to going into the supermarket and buying a quart of strawberries and paying $2.35 for it. And they're kind of pricey. But you get out here and you got an acre of strawberries, and I'm telling you, you got tons of those berries come off of there.
you got lots of it. It's kind of like milking cows, you know. I've got four cows milking as I speak. I'm getting 5 gallons of milk. I only milk them once a day, and I don't even feed them good. I get 5 gallons of milk a day. We drink about a gallon of milk, so I feed 4 gallons a day to my chickens. And the dogs and the cats and everybody else around here. Now, normally I don't milk that many cows, and I'll be getting rid of a couple, three of these cows here pretty shortly. But I'm just pointing out that, you know, when you're out here on the farm, you're in a feast and famine. When a cow comes fresh, I mean, you got milk coming out your ear bowls and don't know what the hell to do with it all. And then later on, you know, when the cow's been milking for a while, like in the wintertime, you know, that milk's like gold because you don't get very much. You know, strawberries in December, you know, are pretty hard to find. Now, notice that this barter here, he's trading strawberries that would be rotten in the field anyway, and this lady's trading what? Manure! She's trading manure. She's getting good strawberries, and he's getting fertilizer for his fields. Yep, both of them are making out like bandits, bartering. The government isn't even involved in this. I mean, if this guy's selling his strawberries, he's got to pay income tax on it. If she was bagging up that manure and selling it out in the marketplace, you'd have to be paying income tax. She's taking a waste product off her dairy farm. He's taking a waste or a lost product off of his berry patch and they're trading it, paying no taxes on it, and both of them are getting 100 cents value on the dollar. Because, you know, if he doesn't trade his berries for the manure, then he's got to go out in the marketplace and buy the fertilizer. He's got to sell his berries. And then he's got to go out in the marketplace and pay cash to buy the fertilizer. So later he bartered the berries for other foodstuffs and for such services as tailoring, knife sharpening, equipment repair, and seasonal promotion spots on the radio. He even traded strawberries for the glass used in a new greenhouse on his property. And that was the start of his produce business. Hey, this guy's got his head on straight. Listen to this again. He's taking his strawberries, and he's bartering for clothes, knife sharpening, equipment repair, and promotion spots on the radio. He goes into the radio station and says, hey, listen, I'd like to buy some advertising. And the guy on the station says, okay, well, that's $30 a minute. You want a one-minute spot on the radio, it's $30. And the guy says, geez, I got to go out here and sell two or three cases of strawberries to buy this spot. Hey, why don't you just take my strawberries directly? You like strawberries? Hey, I got organic strawberries. I'll trade them to you directly. I want $12 a case, $12, $24, $36. I'll give you three cases of strawberries for a one-minute spot on the radio. See how simple that is? Now, here's the rule. In barter, when you're trading, you trade at the retail price. What does the radio spot normally cost? And what does the retail price of strawberries go for in the grocery store? So we use that number to figure this out. See how simple that is? Now, there's other ways to calculate it, but that's the general rule of thumb. Barter is done at retail. Now, if you're trading like the grandfather's clock, that's used. That trades at 50 cents on the dollar. Used trades at 50 cents on the dollar. The cash value is 25% of its retail value. Okay, so if you're going to take $100 bills for that grandfather's clock, I would have offered him $1,000 in $100 bills for the grandfather's clock. In trade, he and I both came to the conclusion $2,100 is the right price, half the retail value. When you want to buy something and pay cash, most people go down and they pay the full retail value. Then when they get into trouble, they have to pawn it for 25 cents on the dollar. Those are the people that take it in the shorts. Don't be one of those people that takes it in the shorts. So I never buy anything new. I shouldn't say never. You know, once in a while I buy something new. I shouldn't say that. But, you know, I wouldn't buy a new car. I wouldn't go down and buy a new Lexus. I might trade for a new Lexus. I might trade for a used Lexus. You know, like my wife traded for a BMW. I would not go down and buy a brand new, I wouldn't even go down and buy a used BMW, for crying out loud. I might trade for it. Now, the trade is good for the guy that's got the car. See, the guy that traded that car, he's sitting here on this car, and he wants to sell it. And then he would like to get $100 bills for it. And he would like to get all of the $100 bills that he paid for it. But that isn't going to happen. Now, that's just the real world out there. That ain't going to happen. So he's going to sell it. And when he sells it for $100 bills, he's going to take it in the shorts. Now, if he can find somebody that's got something that he wants, something that he needs, something he can use, and if the guy who's going to give him whatever it is that he wants, and all of us can use strawberries, can't we? I don't know of anybody that doesn't eat strawberries. And strawberries is a good trade item. They're very perishable and they're seasonal. You know, they've got some drawbacks and hang-ups. Whereas the BMW car, you know, you stick it in the garage and you can sell it next year. But next year it's going to be a year older and it's going to be worth less money. So your BMW is constantly losing value. Every day that goes by, it's worth less money. So it's perishable, isn't it? I mean, if this guy said, well, I want $30,000 for my BMW, and I ain't going to sell it till I get it, and he sticks it in the garage, and he doesn't sell it for 10 years, how much closer to his $30,000 do you think he's going to be in 10 years? I mean, that guy's got to unload that thing as soon as he can, because it's depreciating every day, just like strawberries do. Okay. So you got to find somebody that wants the BMW. And that isn't the easiest thing in the world to do. But hey, you don't know until you ask. And so this guy asked my wife, said, well, would you take that BMW? She thought about it and said, well, maybe. I might. And of course, we got to sit here and think, what in the hell is an old woman 70 years old going to do with a BMW or a Corvette? You know, just be intelligent. She's going to sell them. Who's she going to sell them to? I haven't got a clue. She ain't told me yet. But you can rest assured, she's got it in her mind she's going to sell those to somebody. And she's probably already got them sold or she wouldn't have bought them. And so that's the trick. You got to know where you're going to get rid of this. And you don't want inventory. God, inventory is the enemy of profit. The last thing you want is 500,000 pounds of coffee in your warehouse and no place to sell it. 500,000 pounds of coffee is a drug on the market. God, I don't want 500. I don't want 50 pounds of coffee if I haven't got a place to put it or use it. And so in business, we want to make sure that we know where this stuff is going to be sold and for how much. And listen to this. You make your profit when you buy it. You don't make your profit when you sell. You make your profit when you buy. You collect your profit when you sell. That's where you collect. You make it when you're buying it. And that's why you got to buy it right. So when you're buying cornflakes, you know, you want to be buying those cornflakes for something less than $3 a box. Because if you're out here buying cornflakes for $3 a box and loading them into your pickup truck and driving around from door to door trying to sell them, you know, you're going to starve to death. You need to get deals. You need to be at the Yellow Freight Company auction, where you can buy the whole pallet of corn flakes and get them for 10 cents a box and sell them for 50 cents a box and make five times your investment. And then the length of time that it takes to sell them, how much time did it take to double your money? Was it a week, a month, a year, 5 years, 10? Come on. These are all factors that enter into business, and the difference between business boys and businessmen is being able to put it all together. And barter is one of the ways to put it all together. So we'll be back with more on barter when I give you your reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio worldwide. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can all be accessed through their webpage at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review is an educational service, or the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Now be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And be patient. You know, we're old people, so just be patient. We'll get it out to you. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. And then finally, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine or mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and the editorial review, then please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, now we're talking about 20 small private businesses. I like the little small private business dealing with buying, selling, and trading. And trading is a very valuable part of your overall private business. And you can trade anything. Now, you're not limited to just trading cars. You know, if you're, let's suppose that you're a car salesman. Now, you know, car sales are going right into the tank. And as a car salesman, you're going to be out on the street looking for a job. And there's needs out there. I mean, everybody has needs. And we especially have needs for salesmen. You know, salesmen are really the grease that makes commerce work. Did you know that? That's right. That no good slimy salesman that you're ridiculing and impugning all the time, that's the guy that makes commerce work. Without him, this whole thing just shuts down. It takes a salesman has to be a guy who's in that top 5%. He has to be an extrovert. Well, he's got to develop the capacity of an extrovert. And that's because rejection is hard for all of us. And if you're out here working for wages, you know, you're a mechanic and you're saying, well, I'm not going to sell cars. Well, that's because you can't take rejection. And salesmen are rejected 9 times out of 10. Did you know that? That's exactly the way that works. Businessmen are salesmen. Salesmen are extroverts. And the extroverts are rejected 9 times out of 10. And it doesn't even faze us. And that's because sales, business, is a numbers game. And I know that when I make a proposition, when I make a tender offer to 10 people, one of them's going to buy it. And that if I don't make 10 tender offers, I'm not going to make any sales. So I have to make 10 offers to make one sale. That means I have to be rejected 9 times to make a sale. Rejection is a part and parcel of my life. So when somebody writes me a letter and they castigate me and they say, you dummy, you don't know what you're talking about and blah, 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 and then sometimes they get kind of vitriolic. I don't care. I mean, if you want to write me an email and tune me up, you can get right after it, but you're wasting your time. You don't need to write me a letter and tell me jack diddly squat because I don't give a rat's you know what. I couldn't care less. If you don't like me, you just turn the dial, partner. That's the way that works. You don't like it? Turn it. Now, meanwhile, back on the farm, I'm a pretty valuable guy. I'm a salesman, and I come out here and I say, listen, I'll sell you something. I'm going to sell you 20 small private businesses. I'll show you how you can go out and make $100,000 a year. And I just told you. Now, there's a little bit more to this. I got to tell you, now, I teach a business school, and I think you'd be best advised to go through my business school and let me give you 100 principles of business law. I didn't give you any business principles here this week. But I'm telling you that if a hillbilly over here can put $154,000 in $100 bills on his kitchen table, by God, you can't. Because if you could, partner, you wouldn't be calling me on the telephone complaining to me and telling me about how bad the economy is. I'm not calling you and telling you how bad the economy is. I'm not suffering from any bad economy. Neither is Larry Sykes. But if you're a car salesman and you're locked into selling cars and it's all you know, selling cars. Partner, let me tell you, if you can sell cars, you can sell anything. If you're an insurance agent, if you can sell insurance, God, man, you can sell anything. Those are the two toughest things that God ever put on planet Earth to sell, cars and insurance. Don't see me selling cars and insurance. Now, many times people get off into selling things like Gap jeans and designer handbags and stuff like that. Let me tell you, you're coming into a Great Depression. You're not going to be selling Gap jeans and designer handbags. Hell, people are going to be scrambling to buy bib overalls and high-top shoes, kids. So if you think you're going to sell luxury items out here in this kind of a marketplace, then it is true that there's people with money. You can rest assured that that Mrs. Buffett or Buffett and Mrs. Gates, those people aren't going to be wanting for anything. They're going to be buying luxury goods. You can rest assured that Bill Gates is going to drive a Lexus. Hell, he's probably driving a Lamborghini, and he's always going to be driving a Lamborghini. But hell, you know, if you're a Lamborghini salesman, you can rest assured that a lot of other people down there that might have bought one aren't going to. And sales are going to hurt in luxury items. But hey, listen, barter. All of us want these luxury items. And they will trade for them. I'll do that. I'll trade for a grandfather's clock. I wouldn't buy one. I might trade for a BMW. By God, I ain't going out here and pay $100 bills for one. And that's why I'm bringing this to your attention, because trade is a god-awful valuable, god-awful profitable way to do business. Let me tell you. I'm going to tell you about a couple of profitable trades here. One time I used to be a trade broker for the Meridian Exchange in Meridian, Idaho. And a guy by the name of Tracy Wright had that exchange. And one day, after I left the Atlantis Company, I was looking for work, you know, and so I used to... I was a trader. I had an account out there with the Meridian Exchange. And so Tracy said he could use somebody that could sell. And so Tracy hired me. Paid me well, too. My God, old Tracy wasn't tight. He paid good. But he paid me in trade. I didn't get cash. But I got 50% of the commission. And I got... 50% of the profit that I made on the transaction. Now, the commission was 10%. So, if you just came into the exchange and you bought something for $100, the commission was 10. So, we charged your account for 110, and I got 5, and Tracy got 5. Okay. That's pretty normal, pretty natural. Then, if a guy wanted to trade something, so here's a guy that wanted to trade something. His boy got killed, and the boy had a 1954 Harley Davidson motorcycle. Now, this is about 1981, I believe it was. He had this 54 Harley, and it was a classic then. God knows what a 54 Harley would be worth today, but at that time, that 54 Harley was worth $6,000. And I know that because I called the Harley dealer and I said, what's a 54 Harley worth? Because I didn't have any idea. And he said it's worth about $6,000, and he said that he would buy it. And then I said, okay, partner, you're on. So I traded for this guy. I told the guy it's worth $6,000. And I traded $6,000. I didn't cheat the guy. I mean, he felt bad because it was his boy's bike, and he wanted to get it the hell out of the garage because his boy got killed. He didn't get killed on the bike. He got killed in some other... I think he got killed in a car wreck. And his dad, that Harley just grated on him. He needed to get that out of his life. He needed to get that thing out of the garage. And so I kind of sympathized with him. I said, well, I called the Harley dealer and he says it's worth $6,000 and I'll give you $6,000 and trade for it right now. And he did. And I took the Harley for $6,000. And I put $6,000 on his account right on the spot. I turned around. Now here's the deal on this. I turned around and I sold that to the Harley dealer for $6,000 cash, $100 bills. And I get 50%, so I traded that 50%. Now, that's called cash conversion. Cash conversion. Tracy got half, I got half. And that's the commission and the kind of deal that we have in insurance. Insurance companies are very, very generous with their salesmen. They give them 50% of their initial sale. And then they give them a residual, I think it's 6, 8, 10% maybe, of their renewals. So insurance salesmen get paid very well. It's a god-awful tough product to sell, insurance. It isn't like selling a Harley-Davidson motorcycle. That's the bottom line to them. All right, now, that being the case, can you see that there's some value in this thing called trade? Let me give you another trade. A guy called up. There was a hailstorm came through over in Emmett, Idaho. Now, Emmett is full of cherry orchards, and this guy happened to be a member of the exchange. And he said, I have $50,000 worth of damaged cherries on my trees. Now, cherries are very, very perishable. I think that the cherry picking season's about 3 weeks, maybe four. There's not long to it. And then he said, I've been paid by the insurance company. And see, this is all done. If you're a cherry grower or you're a farmer, you've already sold this crop. And you've got crop insurance. So when a damage comes to your crop, you don't care. He collects a check from the insurance company. But here's the kicker. You can't sell the cherries. So you can't go out there and harvest those cherries and then sell them to the cannery anyway. But you can trade them. There's nothing in the insurance policy that says you can't trade them. So this guy's pretty crafty. He calls me and he says, I got $50,000 worth of cherries. They'll be coming on here in about a week. We need to get rid of them. I can trade them. I can't sell them. So I got on the horn and I called six other exchanges, ranging out to Portland, Oregon, to Salt Lake City, six other exchanges there in the West. I sold the whole $50,000 crop of cherries to those six exchanges. Not only did I get a lot of cherries for myself, you pick. I mean, you got to come out here and pick. And he picked a bunch of them, and he traded them, but he didn't pick a lot of them. Now, normally, he'd pick them all. He'd hire Mexicans to pick all those cherries. He picked some and sold them to far distant places. But remember, you got to pay cash now to your labor, and then you're getting trade back for it. So you don't want to be paying a dollar in cash to get a dollar in trade. You might pay a dollar in cash to get $3 or $4 in trade. Now that might be profitable, but remember, cash is king in a trade transaction. Cash is king. So I moved $50,000. Now I got paid for that. I got paid handsomely. And I got $25,000 off that $50 as my commission. Now, I didn't collect it in cash. I collected it in trade. But now I've got 25,000 trade units on the exchange. See how that comes down? Now, my job, though, is I've got to get rid of those cherries. And the guy in the orchard, he doesn't have the contact. See why I'm telling you that the salesman is the grease that makes commerce work? The cherry grower, here's his normal modus operandi. He signs a contract with a buyer. the buyer is typically the cannery. And the cannery buys his whole crop. It doesn't make any difference if he's got 10,000 worth of cherries or 50,000. It makes a difference if the crop is $1.49 a pound or 39 cents a pound. The cannery buys it all, and they buy it at a set price before a cherry blossom ever comes on the tree. Deal's already made. And then all of those cherries go to the cannery. So he hires the labor. They pick it. They load it in great big tubs, and they ship it off to the cannery, and they can those cherries. All right. He doesn't have any way to sell cherries to Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. Hell, he can't even sell them to Safeway. Farmers don't sell their cherries to Safeway. They sell their cherries by the truckload to some wholesaler who then sells them to a dealer who then sells them to the retailer. And all of those people have connections. All of those people have salesmen. So if you want to short circuit, this is where the trick is. You have to short circuit the connections that everybody else has got. Here's an example. I use buttons in my manufacturing plant. These buttons are selling for 6 cents per button. They're little wooden buttons that go into a 3/8 inch or a 1/2 inch hole. And there are 6 in a package, cost you 36 cents. That's the retail price. Do you know what those things sell for from the manufacturer in Vermont? 1/2 cent each, but there's 16,000 of them in a barrel. They come by the barrel, 16,000 buttons. At retail, those 16,000 buttons times 0.06 is $960. A 16,000 buttons times 8,000 cents. The 8,000 cents is what? 8,000 divided by 100 is 8,000 divided by 100. $80. So I can buy those for $80, or I can buy them for 960. Well, which would I rather do? Well, I want to buy them for $80. But you can rest assured that Thriftway Lumber Company is going to guard their source. They're not going to tell me where I can go buy those, because they want to sell those buttons to me at retail. And that's where you're at with everything in life. Nobody wants to sell this to you at wholesale, nor at the dealer's price, or at some steal, you know, like 500,000 pounds of coffee. Come on. We all want to sell this for retail plus 10. But we can't all do that. And the salesman is the guy that gets in behind the scenes, and he finds out what the sources are. And that takes some innovation. I figured it out, and I found out. Sometimes you can get it off of a label. Sometimes you can get it off of a clerk in the store. Hey, sometimes you get it from a buyer. Hey, where are you buying these buttons? You won't get it from the owner of the Thriftway Lumber Company, but you'll get it from his buyer. If he's got a secretary, you take her out to lunch. You know, it's the way life is. That's what business is all about. And then salesmen are the grease that makes this whole process work. So don't be down on salesmen. Now. They get rejected a lot. They get paid well. Now I got to tell you that we salesmen, we are paid well. And I never complained about that. And that's why I keep telling you people, the money's in sales. The money's in business. Buying, selling, and trading. That's where the money's at. And I don't care if you're in depressed times or not. Now, going back to this BMW, this guy was trying to sell this BMW. It doesn't sell. Boys and girls, when people are trying to put bread on the table and maxing out their credit cards, they're not out buying BMWs. So, the trade was a hell of a good opportunity for him to unload the car. To him, he needs to unload it. But it's also an opportunity for the buyer. If the buyer buys it right and has a place to sell it, got a place to, it can put the buyers and sellers together. And that's what the salesman does. He puts the buyers and sellers together. And of course, you then, as a salesman, you want to short circuit the system and you want to cut out a couple of buyers and sellers so that you can maximize your profits. And one of the great ways of doing that is through barter, through trade. Cut everybody else out. Just go right to the quick. Just go right to the guy that wants to buy it. And that's what I did. Now, the Harley-Davidson guy, now think about this Harley-Davidson guy. The dealer wants to buy the $6,000 Harley-Davidson. He's the guy that told me it was worth $6,000. Well, hell, you know he sold it for $12,000. But see, I don't know where I can sell it for $12,000. Hell, if I knew where I could sell that thing for $12,000, I would have sold it for $12,000. But I haven't got a clue. But the Harley-Davidson dealer, he's got buyers out there that want to buy these classic bikes. He knows where he can unload that. And now I know where I can unload it for cash. So I pay trade, sell for cash, and use it for cash conversion. It's a good deal for the seller who wants to get it out of the garage. It's a good deal for me because I'm going to make $3,000. It's a great deal for Tracy. He's got $3,000. It's a great deal for the Harley-Davidson dealer because he's going to buy it for $6,000 and sell it for $12,000. It's a great deal for the guy that buys it for $12,000 because he didn't know where he could buy that thing for $6,000. Hell, if he would have known that guy had that Harley-Davidson in that garage and it was a drug on the market and he wanted to get rid of it, the guy that's going to pay $12,000 for it would have gone over and offered the guy $6,000 in trade and he would have taken it, wouldn't he? So the trick in all of this is to keep this quiet. I mean, hell, you're not out here telling people where they can unload their $50,000 cherry crop. He calls me and says, hey, can you unload it? I don't know. I'll get back with you. I get on the horn. How many cherries can you take in Portland? How many cherries can you take over here? It's a you-pick operation. And the hell, they started getting people together, and those people were coming from all over on this you-pick to get these cherries because they're going to get these cherries for trade. They're not going to be paying cash for them. They can keep their cash in their pocket. Cash is king. Anytime you tell somebody, you tell your customer that this is trade, you don't have to pay cash for this. That's gold in your pocket. You be thinking about your customer. If you can show your customer how he can keep his cash in his pocket, then you'll take that and trade. Hey, that's where businessmen thrive and business boys fall on the ground. So striking bargains through barter. And I got this article now out of the Mother Earth News, and Mother Earth News is a pretty good publication. They have all kinds of neat stories. But I'll bet you if you just plugged in barter and exchange into a Google search, I'll bet you'd find a lot of articles. And it doesn't take you very long to learn how to barter. And you'll have to do a few trades and find out how it's done, but pretty soon you'll pick up on it. And when you pick up on it, I think you're going to be amazed. Amazed at the profits that you can make. And that's where the money's at. You got to get over the rejection. You know, rejection is something that every salesman has to live with. You got to learn how to take it. Once you learn how to take rejection, 9 times out of 10, hell, you're on your way. That's where life's at. No matter how bad this depression is, and it's going to be a god-awful ringer. That's my sense. No matter how bad it is, those of us that can buy, sell, and trade are going to get through it like a shot. And you can do it just like I do. And you'll get through it just like a shot. All right, kids, I got to leave it there and remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. Remember, we're in 112 countries daily worldwide over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We're open to individuals, but by arrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc and the Law Hour. The website is updated weekly. It has a radio log scheduled and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night at the same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.